So, it's a bit strange, I'm just up here all the time, but I hope you don't get over my voice. Start fresh right now. I'm excited to dig into Matthew chapter 10 with you. Let me just figure this out. Oh no. Great. Oof. All right. So, to place you where we're up to, just figuring everything out. Matthew, last year would have been, we did the Sermon on the Mount, chapters 5-7, and Craig just kicked us off into this new chunk, and this is the second talk that we're up to, so early days. But it's important to know that Jesus has been teaching in the Sermon on the Mount about the kingdom, and it's all upside down, and he's showing how good the kingdom is, and how God has come to reverse things, to care for those who are weak, to bring down those who are strong. That is what it's like to be in his kingdom. And then there's a bunch of miracles. And Craig unpacked this for us. There's three sets of three miracles, which is Jesus showing what the kingdom is going to be like. He's healing diseases and sickness. He's bringing in the outcast. And then he makes a call and says, follow me. And then he does three more miracles, bringing people back from the dead. Just your everyday, you know. And then follow me. And then a couple more, and then we land where we are. And this is where we find out what it means to follow Jesus. And that's what we're looking at. And so you can see in 9:35, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. That's kind of a summary of how he's bringing in the kingdom. He's bringing it in, and it's great. He's healing, he's accepting, it's awesome. And now we're going to turn into what it means. But notice the heart that Jesus has. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them. And so as he goes about bringing in the kingdom, he looks at his people and he sees them as oppressed, misled, and he has compassion. And it is the motivation for his mission right there, that he would turn and start teaching about what it means to follow him, the costs of it, the benefits of it. That's what we're looking at tonight. And so, if you spend a couple of seconds talking to me about movies, movie genres, it's pretty quick to say that my favorite genre is war movie. I decided in year, like 9 or 10, early days, people would always ask, what's your favorite movie, what's your favorite band? I still haven't got an answer to favorite band. But what's your favorite movie? And everyone's like, I decided, no, I'm just going to decide so it's super clear. And I knock the socks off everyone that asks me every single time because they're like, whoa, that was, you've got an answer. It's Braveheart. Braveheart is my favorite movie. And I could give you a list of really good ones, but I love the historically based ones that are well directed, that make you feel something. You feel something for the characters. You feel something for the plot. You leave the theater feeling like a changed man, you know? Those are the kinds of movies that I really like. And that's got nothing to do with what I'm going to talk about. I'm just passionate about it. Come to me for a list of movies. But a very common feature of war movies is the young and eager characters. And you'll know what I'm talking about. It's the ones that are smitten by the prospect of war. They're excited about it. They're excited about their part in it. They're captured by the glory of it and the honor of patriotism. They feel a great sense of duty to sign up. And true of history, they even fake their age so they can sign up and be sent to the front lines. We all know this kind of character exists in real life, but it doesn't last long, at least in the movies. One foot on the beach, bullets whizzing past the ears, friend falls, tear gas in the eyes, they're taking shelter and they are scared. The boldness that they had turns in an instant to crippling fear. Now, if you're a Christian and that's a follower of Jesus and you're here tonight, you might feel similarly about the Christian life. You signed up with bright eyes and a full heart, but you didn't really know what you're signing up for. And now that you're here, or now that you're 10 years into here and counting the cost, you've got no idea that it would be like this. Today, in this chapter, tonight, great chance to recalibrate. Be reminded and be challenged about what it means to follow Jesus. And I really want you to leave feeling refreshed about following Jesus, because there are real rich and comforting benefits about following him. That's my hope. And if you're here today and you're not a Christian, that is, you don't follow Jesus and you're still checking him out, awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's the best place to be hearing about what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. And so I hope that you can gain some clarity on that and really think into these things, because they matter. I'm going to pray to that end and then we'll get stuck into it. Father, by your Spirit, help me to speak your words clearly and truthfully, and help us as a group of people hear your word and be changed. Amen. Amen. Well, the first thing we're going to see tonight is crucially important, and it's going to take the most amount of effort. So if you've got 15 minutes in your tank, give it to me now, and then you can doze off maybe. But here it is. A follower of Jesus is inextricably, my favorite word, linked to God. Inextricably linked to God. No way. You're kidding. I'll say it again. A follower of Jesus is inextricably, inseparably united to God. And as I said, it will be a bit of work here, but here's the basic overview for you visual people. God the Father and Jesus are like this. I'm crossing my fingers for those with poor eyesight. And Jesus' followers and Jesus are like this as well. And so Jesus' followers and God are like, I can't figure out the best way to cross three fingers, but that's what it is. So hold that weird, you can try yourself if you're fidgety. And it will all make sense, don't worry. But take a look firstly, I'm going to ask you to go back to Ezekiel 34. And you're like, ah, why didn't I put a finger in there? Oh, I just lost it. In Ezekiel 34, we didn't read this, but at the beginning of the chapter, God starts out angry. He's angry. And you can see it in verse 2. He's angry because the leaders of Israel are doing a terrible job of leading God's people. Shepherding is the word that's used. So have a look at verse 2. Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say to them, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. Woe to you, shepherds of Israel, who only care for yourselves. Should not shepherds take care of the flock? And what follows from there is basically a list of charges to that effect. It's Israel's leaders taking care of themselves instead of the flock, taking care of themselves at the expense of the flock. And the judgment concludes in verse 10. You can skim your eyes down there. This is what the Sovereign Lord says. I am against the shepherds and will hold them accountable for my flock. God's not happy, they're fired, basically what's happening. And God's solution is in the next verse, verse 11. For this is where we picked up our reading. For this is what the Sovereign Lord says, I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he is with them, so will I look after my sheep. God says, you want something done right, you got to do it yourself, in the truest sense, right? And you can skim your eyes down the following verses and see all, like, as I tried to read, I didn't do a great job of it, all the I wills, I will, I will, I will, I's. They're everywhere. I've underlined them all. It's very helpful. The overwhelming sense is that, whoa, God himself, Yahweh himself, the creator of the universe, sustainer of all things, himself will shepherd his people. And he promises to do a top shelf job of it, which is great for us, his people. Now come back to Matthew chapter 9. I'm going to read the second verse, 36, that we read. When Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Now it's no coincidence that the language is the same in these two passages, why I've chosen to read them together. And it's no coincidence that Matthew picks up on this account for us. He's drawing our attention to something significant about Jesus, and he's drawing our attention to Jesus' heart response to when he sees Israel bruised and battered trodden down, taken advantage of. He has compassion on them because they're like sheep without a shepherd, it says. Jesus has the very same response that God has when he sees his people in Ezekiel 34. And so let me draw this together. One of Jesus's massive claims is that he is what's called the Good Shepherd of the Old Testament, of Ezekiel 34. He is the Good Shepherd of Israel. In Ezekiel 34, where it says, I myself, where God says, I myself will shepherd my people, so will I look after my sheep. It's in Jesus that that's fulfilled. In other words, Jesus is God himself come to shepherd his own people. Jesus and God the Father are like this. Now, that's worth pausing for a moment and thinking about the implications because they're huge. Matthew's telling us something deeply profound about Jesus' identity, who he is. He's not just a top bloke. He's not just a good teacher. His claim was far, 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 far bigger than that. Jesus' claim is to be God, doing what only God can do, being who only God can be to Israel. Therefore, you can't just write Jesus off as anything less than what he says he is. It's convenient to say that he's a good bloke because you don't owe, I don't owe, a good bloke who lived 2,000 years ago anything. I don't owe him anything. And it's convenient to say he's a top teacher because it doesn't cost a whole lot to take on some good teaching and to learn something. But saying Jesus is God, that's a whole other ballgame. We can't just ignore that kind of guy. If he's God, if he's creator, if he's our creator, we owe him everything. And this is why we don't want to say that. This is why Australians really don't want to say that. We hate that idea. Because if we say that, it's going to cost us everything. We owe him everything. But he is. And that's the truth. That's what Matthew's pointing us to. It's huge. Jesus' claim is to be God, and you can't write him off as anything less than that. It's worth reflecting. Who do you think Jesus is? And how did you arrive at that conclusion? Is it convenient or is it the truth? And even bigger than that, what are you going to do with Jesus? Will you follow him or won't you? This passage, if you get the chance to read the whole chapter by yourself, it's got some weighty implications about our response to Jesus. Jesus as God means that when you accept or reject Jesus, you accept or reject God. It means when you ignore Jesus, you're ignoring God. That's huge. Matthew 10, we're here, verse 32, 33. I'll show you some short pieces. It says this, whoever acknowledges me before others, that's Jesus speaking, I will also acknowledge before my Father in heaven. But whoever disowns me before others, I will disown before my Father in heaven. It's a serious thing. And Jesus' teachings in this chapter and many other places are full of heavy implications of how you respond to Jesus. But the good news is the reverse is also true. You know, rest assured, friends, when you choose to follow Jesus, you're choosing to follow God. When you give up everything you have to follow the creator of all things and giver of all good things, that's a good choice. That is a wise choice. You don't really lose anything when you give up everything. You find true life. And so Matthew 10, 37, skim down a few verses. Anyone who loves their father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves their son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever does not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds their life will lose it. That's some cost. That's some heavy cost. But the very next words, whoever loses their life for my sake will find it. Jesus and God the Father are like this. The implications are huge. What are you going to do with Jesus? That's a big question. And that was a big stepping stone, but we're not there yet. We haven't crossed all the fingers, not the T's. So let's check out the rest. Jesus sends his followers to shepherd his flock. That might sound pretty standard to you, but it's actually quite significant. In the beginning of this chapter, the first couple of verses, we see Jesus doing two things, giving his own authority to his followers and then sending them out to shepherd. So chapter 10, verse 1, Jesus called his 12 disciples to him and gave them authority. It's a lot of authority. To drive out impure spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions. Do not go among the Gentiles or enter any other town of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. Jesus, follow my logic, the good shepherd, God himself, gives his authority, to his followers to be able to shepherd his people on his behalf. Now, in doing this, he demonstrates a profound reality of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Being a follower of him, being a disciple of him, is being his direct representative. And by implication, a direct representative of the Father. It's not a half-hearted, rogue representation where we do what we want like the leaders of Israel. We are united to Jesus, working under him with his authority. Verse 40 ties it all together for us. Read it slowly with me. Speaking to his followers, anyone who welcomes you welcomes me. Two fingers crossed. Anyone who welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Add your third in somehow. The reality is, he says, is that my followers are united to me. I'm united to the one who sent me, my Father. We're united to God, followers of Jesus. And so here's an illustration. If you've seen Avatar, the blue people Avatar, not the other ones, who's seen it? Good. Oh, surely. Come on. Who's seen it? Were you lazy? That many people not seen it. Wow. Okay. Maybe a bad illustration. Avatar, for you guys who have seen it. Jake Sully, the main character, he's united to his avatar, to a crazy machine, which is united to the Na'vi, which is united to Ewa. All right, so there's a little illustration. And if you haven't seen Avatar, it's like Jesus' followers are united to Jesus, and Jesus is united to God the Father. There's no illustration. So a follower of Jesus, here's the point, is inextricably united to God. That's the big thing to get out of here. And so when Jesus says to his followers and sends them out and says this, the authority you carry with you, the message you preach, the decisions you make, you do so as direct representatives of God. That is profound. That is the big thing. And if that's new to you, read this chapter. It's amazing the kind of links that you'll pick up and the significant things. And I don't want to rob you of doing that. I've enjoyed going through the whole chapter with a fine-tooth comb, and I want you to do that as well. But we'll see if we can unpack the implications of this a little bit. I've got five things. Yeah, it's really hard. I've got five things to say about what it means to be united and caught up in this. And it's simply that those who are united to Jesus are like Jesus. That's the principle, and here's five ways that those who are united to Jesus share him and are like him. So the first one, those united to Jesus share his heart for the lost. I've found it helpful this week to be reminded of Jesus' heart for the lost, his compassion. The very first verse we read, 9:35. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. There's lots of good reasons to share the good news of Jesus with friends, family, people we work with. Anyone around us, right? But when I tell them to myself over and over again, I often miss the heart of it. A compassion for lost people. A love for lost people. There's a command to go out and make disciples. And we could go, all right, there's a command. But the command is rooted in and comes out of this God's arousal of compassion for lost people. His love for lost people demonstrated the biggest act and demonstration of love in sending his son Jesus. And if I could grasp that just a little more tightly, it might change the way I see the world. It might change the way I see all the people that I sit down next to on the train carriage, on the bus, the people I walk past on the street, the guys left and right who sit next to me in the office. It might change that. I might find myself on my knees more, as verse 37 Jesus says, praying for workers. Praying for gospel workers. I might find myself more ready to be sent as a gospel worker into the world. I might find myself a little bit more aligned to God's purposes in the world, sharing his heart. Don't fall for the world's judgment of Jesus and his mission. God doesn't hate the world. That's a lie. He loves it. He doesn't hate sinners. That's a lie. He loves sinners. He hates sin. He loves people. He loves his people and wants to see them saved. And in an awesome act, stirred out of his compassion, he's acted on that, giving us Jesus for salvation. Be reminded, as I have this week, of the compassion, the heart and love of Jesus when he sees people that are lost. Do you walk around and see people as lost and have pity and compassion for people in the everyday world? I find I often am quicker to judgment than compassion. So maybe you're like me, maybe you're not. Second thing, those united to Jesus share his reputation and fate. Now, I've been challenged, a challenging word for you guys, from this passion to be willing to be united to Jesus in his reputation, which leads to suffering. In front of us in this chapter, we have a very, very clear teaching from Jesus that his followers will suffer if they follow him on account of him. Verse 17, chapter 10, be on your guard, you will be handed over to local councils and flogged in the synagogues. On my account, on account of my name, you will be flogged before governors and kings as witnesses to them and to the Gentiles. And again, verse 22, you will be hated by everyone because of me. The promise of Jesus again and again to his followers is that they're going to suffer for being associated with him. And it's places like this very chapter that Jesus sets up that promise, that covenant of suffering with his followers. No longer will God's people be marked with all this material blessing necessarily. That isn't the way he's operating. They will be marked by spiritual blessing in suffering. Don't be fooled or misguided. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. To follow Jesus is a call to follow him into the flames of persecution. And that's a challenging thought. More and more these days, I'm convinced that that's where we're headed, more and more. And so we've got to get this right now. We've got to get this right, that we're following Jesus. We're sharing his reputation. And I don't know about you, but I just don't like being hated. People decide they hate Jesus and they hear that I'm a follower of Jesus and they decide they hate me. Before they know me, they think they know me and they hate me. And that doesn't feel nice. And it will be a constant temptation to separate myself from that, to try and separate my reputation from his, my reputation from ours, just even a little bit. But it'd be death, absolute death to do so. A pithy fear of man and this life in comparison to the real fear we should have of God, which we read earlier. I'll let you find that verse yourself. So be challenged this week, as I have, to fully share the reputation of Jesus as his follower. If we can't get that now, I worry for us in the future. So get on to that. Number three, those united to Jesus share the same Father. Refreshing. be refreshed by this. Especially after being challenged about suffering, be refreshed to hear that Jesus' Father is your Father, is my Father. The Father is my Father. Verse 29, are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Fact, they are, I know that. Yet not one of them will fall to the ground outside your Father's care. And even the very hairs on your head are numbered, harder for some than others. So don't be afraid. You're worth more than many sparrows. Doesn't that bring warmth to your heart? To know that the sovereign carer is your Father. All things are in his power and control. Nothing takes him by surprise. Nothing can overcome him. Nothing gets in his way. And he cares for me as my Father. And so when you're living in a world that's under the sovereignty of God, he's got everything, God always wins. And if you're following that God, and if that God is your Father, you win. It may not seem like you're winning, but you're winning. And so what is there to fear? Nothing. If we grasp this completely, nothing, absolutely nothing. It's such a rich and solid antidote to fear. Rich and solid, unmovable. Nothing will give you an antidote to fear like that, if we could really grasp it. Be refreshed. God is your Father. Number four, those united to Jesus share the same sacrifice. And so something that struck me and always strikes me in a passage like this and others, other Gospels that record the same account, similar account, is the reminder of the sacrifice of Jesus' mission. It's got to be one of the most challenging verses and ideas in the Bible, but that run of verses from verse 34, but I'm thinking verse 38 in particular, whoever does not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. That language requires sacrifice to follow Jesus. That's a lot of sacrifice to count. Following him on his mission is to divide people as to who he is. That's why there's people fighting in their own families. That's why your brother is your enemy. It's because of your association with Jesus. But here's the real challenge. Is that really a sacrifice? I've already said it, but lose your life, find life, true life in Jesus. It really isn't. If someone said, give me $5 now, I'll give you $100 in a minute. I don't see that $5 as a sacrifice, I guess, if we're going to get technical. But there are real sacrifices in this life. Friends, family, job, security, a home. For a relationship with God, though, for eternity, it's a no-brainer if we've got a clear thought on it. But every day, I struggle to weigh that cost right. And so maybe you're like me, and there's a challenge there for us. Lastly, number five, those united to Jesus share the same reward. Our unity with Jesus means that his inheritance is ours. The security of that is airtight. Our efforts towards following Jesus and his kingdom, everything is seen and everything is rewarded. Verse 42, right at the end. And if anyone gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones who is my disciple, truly I tell you, that person will certainly not lose their reward. The reward of the gospel, the reward of salvation, the reward of eternal relationship with God, or relationship with God for eternity. That is really nice. And to see that in its kind of glimpses all over the Bible, but Ezekiel 34, we read it, to see what God the Father is as a shepherd, as our shepherd, it's a beautiful image. Healing, no sickness, acceptance, not rejected, for eternity. Living with the giver of all good things that overflows with love. So go read Ezekiel 34 again if you want to be charged up about that. Be refreshed by that fact. So there it is, what it means to be a follower of Jesus, united to him, united to God, those big implications to do with what you do with Jesus, and those implications flowing out of sharing Jesus, sharing his heart, It's big stuff to think about. Is that what you've signed up for? I hope it is. I hope it is. And I hope that you're able to recalibrate. I hope that you're able to be reminded, be challenged, be refreshed in that if you are a Christian. And if you're not a follower of Jesus, I hope that's provided you with some insight. There are some really exciting things in store for those who follow Jesus. And I want to encourage you to think about that. What will you do with Jesus? What will you make of him? How will you respond to his call to follow him? I'm going to pray for us all. Pray with me.